Game on 2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now.
Game on, weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Yes, a big thank you to the two Johnnies for taking us through this afternoon. It's Wednesday the 4th of May. I'm Shane Dawson and you're listening to Game On. Coming up this evening, David Snaid is in studios. We have a feast of association football news, plus the small matter of Manchester City versus Real Madrid in their Champions League semi-final second leg.
I think they're two good teams. We saw it 1 week ago when we played. They are the champions in Spain. We are trying to be champion. So, like I said, 1 week ago, so be in the semi-final to try to, you know, to be in another final second time year in a row is our target.
Yes, that was a very chesty Pep Guardiola. In boxing, Chris McNulty brings us the latest as the IABA asked Bernard Dunne to reconsider his resignation. Meanwhile, in Gaelic games, is Mayo hurling having its Saipan moment? Damien Lawler brings us up to speed on that and brings us a hard-hitting interview with Kilcoo's Eugene Brannigan on why so few of his clubmates play for the county.
Listen, if the county had a winning mentality, maybe you'd think of it joining it, but at the minute I can't see that, or I haven't seen that this past number of years, so it's not a thing for most Kilkenny players because we want to win.
As always, if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Yes, hello there. It is great to have your company on this Wednesday evening, wherever in the world you are tuning in from, you're listening to Game On, and I am in the company of David Snaid in studio. And David, a couple of news headlines I want to get through first that caught my eye. I suppose, as I mentioned in my intro a few moments ago, today's headline news, Bernard Dunne left his role as the Irish Athletic Boxing Association's High Performance Director. We will have more on that a little bit later on with Chris McNulty. Munster Rugby have confirmed the signing of Mike Prendergast as attack coach on a 3-year contract ahead of the 2022-23 season. He will be an integral part of Graham Rowntree's new coaching team ahead of next season. Rashida Adeleke has been nominated by the European Athletics for April Athlete of the Month. That news comes after Adeleke broke the Irish 60 metre indoor record at the NCAA Indoor Championships in Alabama recently. Republic of Ireland midfielder Jason Malumbi has signed a 3-year deal at West Brom following a successful loan spell from Brighton this season. Sticking with soccer, Watford boss Roy Hodgson has said he will not be at the club next season and does not expect to take on another managerial job in the Premier League. And finally, congratulations to the Republic of Ireland cerebral palsy team who defeated Thailand 6-0 and now plan for a quarter final in the CP World Cup in Spain. And also, sorry, one news headline that I left out, Diego Maradona's Hand of God shirt has been sold at auction for €8.5 million, I believe. Ridiculous money. We do also have the Real Madrid team news in, which we'll get to in 2 moments' time. Because first, David, I have to ask you, 8.5. What's the most you ever paid for a vintage retro shirt?
Well, it's actually funny because I was actually racking my brains thinking that, because I went through a bit of a phase during the first lockdown, kind of a bit of like pandemic regression where I start buying all these old jerseys.
And Paulo Sam from the 90s or something.
I know, yeah. Paulo Sam, Eddie Gormley and Martin Russell, you know, the golden trinity, you know. But I got the Ronaldo one, not the obviously the one he wore, but just like an old school Ronaldo one from the 98 World Cup.
Okay.
Kind of that yellow one. So yeah. I kind of went through I kind of had that, and that kind of has pride of place at the moment, you know. Okay. It kind of brought me back to...
Didn't pay $8.5 million for it, though.
No, a bit less. That actually even... I was just laughing there because I saw that. It was actually Steve Hodge, the England midfielder, who he swapped with. He's the one who put it up, and it just gave me that, like, on Sotheby's for the ones who sold it. Yeah. So I just have visions. I remember that episode of Only Fools and Horses when Del Boy and Rodney are outside, and they're like, how much did they go for? So like, and him and his wife, Steve Hodge's wife, saying, no, it's not the real jersey. That we, and Sotheby's proved, no, this is the jersey, whatever. Yeah. And they went through Maradona's autobiography where he said that you swap with him. So I'm just picturing Steve Hodge and his wife
that
outside Sotheby's in, like, in the little Robert Malone shake, and I can't believe it. But
Steve Hodge,
and in fairness, now no one in England can ever complain about that goal ever again, considering one of the players has now benefited hugely from it. And I laughed. There's a great tweet there by from Peter Reid, who put a picture up of himself beside the jersey when it was in one of the museums, whatever, and just saying this was the closest I got to it. because obviously he was one of the seven players who got left in the dust from that other amazing goal that Maradona scored. But yeah, just incredible. Some money if you have it.
Oh, I know. I wish. We do have a bit of early team news, as always with Real Madrid. It's ridiculous. It's
confidence, isn't it?
It is. Anyway, team news is Courtois, Carvajal, Militao, Nacho, Cruz, Benzema, Modric, Casemiro returns, which is a big boost for Real Madrid in midfield. Valverde, Vinicius Jr. And Ferland Mendy. We will be getting into this in detail a little bit later on, David, but strong enough lineup to say the least there.
Yeah, quality. What do you expect from a team who are in the last four of the Champions League? I suppose I'm guessing they haven't been able to celebrate properly the winning the league over the weekend, but again, just a team that's going to be full of confidence. And even though, like, you kind of forget after just the madness of that first game, like, they do have to actually go and put on a serious performance to win here. You know what I mean? Like, they're a goal down, and away goals don't count, so they have to go and actually go and deliver. And like, if it's Anton as well, like the second leg of the previous round against Chelsea in that quarter final with some of that game, like, where Chelsea's performance and that was just sensational, and Madrid were capable of actually getting back. Now, I mean, obviously they done well in the first leg too, but it's just set up to be tantalising.
I can't wait.
I wonder what Liverpool fans want from this game. Like, do they want Madrid? They're probably looking Madrid. Fancy that, maybe. But then City as well. It's tantalising, really.
Well, Liverpool fans listening in, 51552, who'd you rather get? We have the Real Madrid team news. We hope to have the Manchester City team news a little bit later on. David, you're sticking around for the hour, and we will be chatting football a little bit later on.
Game on.
GAA.
But now it is time to turn our attention to Gaelic Games in the company of RTE Gaelic Games journalist Damien Lawler. And Damien, you've been busy this week. I suppose let's start with Mayo, Damien, and the situation that is developing, I suppose. So the Mayo senior hurling management have expressed their disappointment at not being able to play their upcoming Christy Ring Cup home fixtures at Hastings Insurance McHale Park after a poor league campaign which was dogged by injuries to key players. Mayo were relegated to Division 3 after losing by a point to Wicklow. However, with a replenished squad and a turnaround in form, Mayo are now just two wins away from a Christy Ring Cup final. I saw comments from Cora Staunton a little bit earlier on, siding with the hurlers as well, as I suppose this situation. I mentioned in my intro that this could be Mayo's Saipan. Am I being too dramatic when I say that? Will they go back on themselves? What is the situation at the moment, Damo?
I never call you over dramatic, Shane. Anyway,
you've called me worse.
Yeah. I'm just the how surprised you were at the intro when you said I had a busy week, as if. Just never happened. But I had a busy week.
You're racking up the mileage, anyway.
Yeah, well, I wish I was, but a lot of it these days is look. The last 2 years have been mad. Like a lot of our work has been kind of virtual or online. But this is a pressing issue, Shane, for the Mayo hurlers, and County Board are fairly rigid in their viewpoint, and the Mayo hurlers are rigid in their viewpoint. And I think if you speak privately to Mayo hurlers, they'll tell you like that. I think they're maybe weary. Over time, like a lot of counties have a key sport, and then maybe the other code suffers just a little bit, or that's the perception anyway. But Mayo had a pretty torrid league campaign. They weren't allowed to play designated players because that rule wasn't passed until after the league at Congress. They had a number of key injuries. Tureen, one of the leading heartlands in hurling, got to the All-Ireland Intermediate semi-final and played Mace last year, so a lot of those players were taking an extended break, and then they had four or five key injuries as well. So they had a torrid enough league. They got relegated, but they just barely got relegated, lost their last game by a point to Wicklow. Since then, they've turned it around for the championship. They now just stand two games away from a Christy Ring Cup final. They have a home game against Sligo this weekend and a home game against Derry the following weekend, Shane, and they want to play those games in Hastings Insurance, McHale Park. County Board are saying that not all teams can avail of this facility at the moment. The pitch is newly led, as you know. The Connacht Minor Football Championship will see the Mayo football team playing in Ballina on Friday, for example. And there's work ongoing in one of the Gormouth areas as well. So I think that the key point, though, that the Mayo board are making, that they're following a recommendation from the head groundsman in Crow Park as to the protection of that field. The Mayo hurlers don't agree with it. They put in a request through the executive to have access to the ground. That's been denied. They're fairly upset that it has been denied. They're calling for a rethink. I wouldn't say the county board are delighted that they've talked to the media about it, But I'd say the hurling people felt that they, I wouldn't say they had no other choice, but I think the hurling people felt that they wanted their argument highlighted. And it's not good. It's probably not a five-pound moment, but it's not good. No county wants their affairs like that, I suppose, out in public. But look, just as a journalist, came up, got the story, but tried to balance it out as well. So that's kind of where we're at with it. I think the Mayo hurlers are looking for maybe a U-turn along the way. I'm not so sure that's going to happen. So it will be one to watch going forward, no doubt about that.
Is there a cut-off point in terms of fixture planning or anything that you're aware of? That is there a set point that when it does go past this time, that it will be a case of, well, listen, even if we did want to let you play in Castlebar, we can't?
In my own mind, I don't think they could go back. They could go past tomorrow, to be honest with you. I think that I think you'd like to have maybe arrangements made. In terms of, there won't be a massive crowd at it, let's be honest, but in terms of the infrastructure around that game and holding the game, you probably want to have a little bit of advance notice there as well. I think the Mayo hurlers, Shane, are really cheesed off that the Galway footballers got in for a look around and a kick around before the Connacht final. The board have reassured them that it was just a kick around and a watch, but I think they can really tolerate their own county footballers being in there, even though that's just supposed to be for ball work, according to the county board. But I think the sight of the Galway team in there before it just really cheesed them off. But again, look, the other side of it is Galway Mayo and the football, that's a massive, massive game. It's a massive draw, live TV, huge attention, sellout crowd on the day almost. So I think you got to bear that in mind as well. But I would imagine myself, from my own experience, the cut-off point would be around now, a stroke tomorrow. I think they're happy enough that Ballina have made the facilities available and they're grateful, but they make the point it's not really a pitch for hurling. And I suppose, if I'm being honest about it, Shane, I've seen it over the years. Counties like Kildare, Carlow, Westmeath, Meath, Down, they make a step up in hurling and Leash, and they're not given enough support, neither at home nor centrally, and they fall back down the ladder again. I think Down hurling is trying to make huge strides at the moment as well. And I would hate to see them falling away. Cheddar Plunkett and these guys have almost single-handedly brought Leash to the senior stage. But they founded programmes at under-14 level to feed all the players the way through the Setanta and Cucullin programmes. I would like to see the GEA coming in centrally, Shane, to counties like Mayo, Carlow, Kildare, Westmeath, where there is a bit of a draw for hurling and a bit of a push in developing counties. Invest more resources, more money, more games development officers. And David will talk to you about the benefit they have for soccer at local, regional level. And you can see that through the scatter of Irish players on the national team. They're now nationwide. It's not just a Dublin stronghold. But I think more GBOs, more promotion, more resources, scholarships, anything to try and drive it on. And it should be a 5-year strategic plan to sustain these counties. Otherwise, I fear stories like we did yesterday, you're going to see them occurring a lot more often.
Absolutely, and I suppose that's unfortunately the case. Hopefully the game of hurling can grow across the country, and it's been something that we've been saying for many years now. If there is any developments, I'm sure we'll catch it on the RT Sport website, courtesy of yourself. You mentioned the rise of Down hurling, but I want to turn my attention to Down football, and in particular, a very honest interview that you've done with Eugene Brannigan that I want to play a clip of audio from.
Okay.
Before I get your thoughts, Damo.
Do you guys feel pressure then, like, to, when the county scene comes on, just to maybe make yourself available for that? And I know in previous times, people stay with their club and they're happy with that.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, I'm a club man. That's the truth. I have no ambition to play for the county. Just, you're brought up, you're a club. And listen, if the county had a winning mentality, maybe you'd think of a join it. But at the minute, I can't see that, or I haven't seen that this past number of years. So it's not a thing for most Kilkenny players, because we want to win.
What could change that? I mean, does it have to be,
Have to be a manager with a winning mentality, I think.
But James McCartan would be a winner as well, in fairness to him, you know?
Yeah, but I think it's a group of players, the core group of players there. They've never won anything, and I don't think they know how to win things, and I think that would need a change.
Do you get pressure from outside clubs for that stance?
I think everyone beats in topical Coo no matter what. Even when we're down and out or winning all arms, I think we're just one of them clubs that always seems to be everyone on top of it. But I think that sort of fuels our fire to keep going.
I saw a couple of players in Down said that with the Talchin Cup they mightn't have any interest in playing either. Maybe that's the
Yeah, that can be, but listen, that's where they're at.
Yeah.
So it's all right saying them things, but if that's where you're at, that's where you're at. You know, you had to play in them things if that's the... You're obviously trained that standard.
Final question. Speaking to the lads from Loughmore, Castleline and Tipperary, yeah. And they've had good success, not what you've had, yeah. But they're worried about what's coming and what's not coming. How hard is it for you guys to keep the production lines there? It's only a small enough parish, you know?
Yeah, it's very hard because they're just... It's just after winning the All-Ireland, everyone's sort of in a high. It's hard to get... I've never seen it in my 7 years, but this year it's hard to get going. It's hard to get motivated, but we've won 3 out of our first 4 league games and we've probably the toughest opposition, so we're happy. And there's a lot of young boys playing, so that's the main thing.
Well, honest stuff there, Damien. And,
yeah.
Like, I suppose my takeaway from that is if you want to create and I suppose, nurture a winning mentality, you want to have the best players in the county playing. And on the flip side of that, and to be fair, Eugene's taken a bit of flack now for giving this interview, yeah. But he was honest. And I think so many people have just called for honesty from sports people across the board, but in particular, people associated with Gaelic Games to give honest interviews. And that's exactly what he's done.
Yeah, he was straight as a die. And it's actually great to talk to him. And look, I knew myself, like, there's only 2 Kilkenny players available to the Down squad this year, but, like, for the last few years, it's been an issue trying to get them on board. So, I mean, I was hardly going to do an interview. He got the AIB Club Footballer of the Year. I mean, I was hardly going to do an interview with him and not ask him about it, particularly when Down are at a low level. My own view is that if the Kilkenny contingent were in there, Down would obviously be a much different operation. And I think the manager who can get those guys back in. But James McCartan tried very hard to get them back in. Like, if you can't do it for James McCartan, who are you going to do it for? So I wouldn't hold out much hope of those guys coming back into the fold. They seem very, very happy with their club. I've been up there before. I spoke to Eugene's brother, Aaron, last year. Aaron was probably a bit more reserved in his comments about the Down squad, but they're straight as a die. It's a small parish. They look out for each other, something awful. They've had to work a long way to get to an All-Ireland title. They won't be popular in the county for saying stuff like that, but they're working popular anyway, according to Eugene, and I suppose the local dynamic up there. Look, no getting away from it, though. Like, I mean, you can't really... How will I put it, Shane? Like, the guys who were in there playing for Down at the minute, they may not be getting the success that they want, but... And I know that James McCartan was close to leaving the setup just a few weeks ago, so clearly all is not 100%. And you can see that maybe the Kilkenny boys feel that maybe some players could be more serious about it. But at the end of the day, they are in their training, no matter what you say about their form or their results. But look, from a journalist's point of view, just a breath of fresh air, just to ask a question and get an answer, reply, is brilliant. And I knew straight away, like, he's a very, very... He talks as how he plays, like, honest, direct. He didn't get Club Footballer of the Year for the crack either, you know. He was an unbelievable runner and performer for his team this year. But look, it caused a stir. But if I got an interview like that every time, I'd be Journalist of the Year every year. In the retirement plan, I'd be myself and Steve Hodge would be over in the Canaries.
Well, speaking of which, Damo, so if you had the 8 million or the 8.5 million, what jersey are you bidding for? Babs Keaton, Owen Kelly, no, what are you going with?
I'd go for Nicky English, but from a soccer perspective, Team 16 all the time. And I had a replica framed for many, many years. But yeah, it would be Nicky English for me, and it would be Roy Keane after that then. But fair play, Steve Hodge, he did well with that one.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
My final question before I let you go, Damien, coming back to Gaelic Games and hurling, I couldn't let you go, being the proud tip man that you are. Tipperary Slim Championship hopes taking another blow with the news that Jason Ford and James Quigley will miss Sunday's showdown with Limerick, while former All-Star John McGrath is also out for the rest of the season. Do you have any hope?
It's going to be a tough one, Shane. Like, I've got much more hope with the under-20 final. We're playing them in the... Tipper playing them in the under-20 final, and I have a clubmate, Paddy Williams, in goal. So we've lost the... When I say we, Tipperary have lost the player, Ed Connolly, number 10. So he's a huge loss as well. But for senior, they've got a mountain to climb in this one, Shane. Colin Bonner has had no luck since he took over whatsoever. A couple of key players, Fitzgibbon Cup players, went off travelling. He's had a raft of injuries. Even Tommy Dunn, his coach, is unavailable at the moment as well. And Limerick are on an all-time high. So you can only see one outcome in this game. But I think, just looking carefully behind the scenes, the Tip Minors and Tip Under-20s are in Munster Finals. And to me, that's a sign of rebuilding progress at underage again, and I'd be looking more to that now than anything, because this year is effectively over for Tipperary and Cork at that level.
Yeah, absolutely. And that under-20s final is, of course, in the Gaelic grounds at 7:30 this evening, Limerick-Tipperary. Yeah. So if you're in the Limerick area, perfect match to get down to after Game On, of course. Damien Lawler, pleasure as always. Pleasure chatting, and I'm sure as if there is any developments in that Mayo story or indeed any other breaking stories across the GAA world, we'll be chatting again later in the week. But Damien Lawler, mind yourself. So from Gaelic Games to boxing, we'll be chatting to Chris McNulty, who will be bringing us up to date on the Bernard Dunne situation in a few moments' time.
RTE 2FM. Game On. On 2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now. Game On. Boxing.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On this Wednesday evening as we turn our attention to boxing in the company of boxing journalist Chris McNulty. Chris, a pleasure to chat as always. I suppose just giving a synopsis on today's events, because this is a developing story. So Bernard Dunne has left his role as the Irish Athletic Boxing Association's High Performance Director. Dunne had been on extended leave from the role since the Tokyo Olympics, at which Ireland won 2 boxing medals, but has now departed from the position permanently. Bernard Dunne lodged a complaint with IABA CEO Fergal Caruth in November after an unsigned SWOT analysis, which is a strategic planning and management technique used to identify strengths, weaknesses, opportunities and threats critical of his performance, was circulated at board level prior to Tokyo. The former world champion took up the role in 2017 and oversaw a difficult period in Irish amateur boxing, with stalwarts Katie Taylor, Michael Conlon and Paddy Barnes having turned pro after failing to medal at the Rio Olympics the year before. Since then, the Irish Amateur Boxing Association released a statement confirming that it has received Bernard Dunne's resignation as High Performance Director. The association deeply regrets Bernard's decision, given the great contribution he has made to our sport since his appointment in 2017, they say. They go on to say the IBA would also like to note that its acceptance of his resignation is provisional, as it has asked Bernard to reconsider his position. So they go on to note that the IABA has always regarded this document as malicious and an appalling attack on a member of staff and on the high performance unit. This is the most recent instance of a member of staff being subjected to undesirable behaviour solely because they are employees of the company. Kelly Harrington tweeted as well, kind of quote tweeted the RTÉ Sports story on the statement released by the association, and Kelly Harrington said, "I second that and would like to see him change his mind, but it's hard to when you are not allowed to do your job the way it should be. He was a great director of the HP," which of course is the high performance. So Chris, we're coming from a situation where there was such positivity in the boxing world after a lot of negativity, and now we're being thrown this story. It's not ideal for the boxing world, to say the least.
No, it's certainly not ideal, but I suppose, Ian, unfortunately, Irish boxing has had this habit in recent times where there are bouts of positivity and all of a sudden Irish boxing seems to uppercut itself rather spectacularly. It doesn't come as a surprise. The timing, I suppose, on the week that's in it is unfortunate, because Irish boxing was riding on such a crest of a wave after Saturday night and stuff. And, you know, everybody within the sport was on a high, but this is something that's been rumbling in the background for quite a while, even prior to the Tokyo Olympics, where, you know, you mentioned the SWOT analysis position paper that was anonymously signed by 2 people. And, you know, Bernard, upon his return from Tokyo, had lodged a complaint. And Bernard, indeed, has been on leave since he returned from Tokyo and hasn't been... There's been no one in this position since the Tokyo Olympic Games. And I suppose very disappointing as well, because we're coming on the eve of the Women's World Championships, which get underway later this week in Turkey, and also the Men's European Championships get underway in Armenia in a couple of weeks' time. And Ireland with, you know, quite strong, quite decent teams going to both of those championships. And unfortunately, not just going to the championships, but their preparation coming without their, you know, the high performance director. And I mean, you quoted Kelly Harrington's tweet there. I mean, Irish boxers, and you know, when you see the Olympic champion tweeting such such support, it sort of shows you that, you know, the boxers within the HPU certainly have Bernard Dunn's back and would like to see him reinstated in the position, or like to see him reinstate himself in the position.
In terms of, I suppose, the comments made, Jason Quigley was another person to mention that Irish amateur boxing has been struggling over the years outside of the ring, and I don't think anyone can put their finger on it as to why. So there is that sentiment that it isn't, I suppose, the issue in the ring, it's issues outside the ring. Like, Jason Quigley struggles to put his finger on it as to why. Can you shed some light, or what's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, well, I think for me the biggest problem, I mean, we all know the sport at the top level in this country is fractured. I mean, for me the biggest issue is that the IABA and its own high performance unit are essentially running as two separate sort of entities, where, you know, the HPU is a branch essentially of the IABA. But for me this comes back to, I suppose, power, and I think the language within the IABA statement released today, it was quite lengthy. I mean, you know, they say that, you know, there was robust dissatisfaction from a small cohort of the Irish boxing family. And this is going back to 2003. We're going back, you know, that far where the problems were. And it says that, you know, they desire to see the selection of Team Ireland boxers and all connected matters undertaken by people other than professionals or high-performance staff. So I suppose you look at certain ways that teams for championships are selected now. They're not selected, you know, all the time on the back of national championships, and I suppose for people of a certain vintage and people of certain persuasions, that's not how you do things. But, I mean, the statement does make the very valid point that this is not a realistic option in modern high-performance sport, where there's so much more than maybe one championship to reconsider. It comes back, I think, maybe, I suppose, power is always at the crux of issues like this, but it comes back as well to the IABA's own structures and own governance. I mean, the IABA, remember, is still subjected to a review from Sport Ireland. They were hauled before the Oireachtas Committee last year. And, you know, the AGM was deferred in December. Part of it was held in late December. And other parts of it still haven't been held 5 months on. So, you know, we're all the time looking for reforms. We've got a divided board of directors. There was issues last year where, you know, the Central Council of the IABA passed a motion of no confidence in three of its own units, the Leinster and Connacht Councils and the Dublin County Board. So that sort of tells you, you know, the frustrations of the boxers within, and maybe, you know, as Jason alluded to earlier, the boxers really don't sort of want to concern themselves with the politics within. You know, they just want the camp, the high-performance unit, to be functioning and working correctly. And unfortunately now, when it seeps into things like this, that isn't possible. I think Kelly Harrington's tweet early on was very noteworthy, and again, the language she used, it's hard when you're not allowed to do your job the way it should be done. Clearly, boxers are noticing the issues that are creeping in, and clearly that will have an effect on their preparation, and subsequently could affect performance.
Yeah, so, well, speaking of that then, short term, how will this affect, you mentioned the Women's Worlds and the Men's Europeans coming up, the Women's Worlds this week and the Men's Europeans at the end of the month, and the boxers that Ireland are sending out, obviously Kelly Harrington sustained an injury during a training camp in Italy, so she won't be there, but Aoife O'Rourke, Michaela Walsh, household names from the women's side of things. On the men's side of things, though, are we kind of coming that this is the new generation coming through? It's a team that perhaps we haven't seen many, or perhaps the casual viewer hasn't seen many of these boxers before. There's none of the Olympic qualifiers, but the team does include the likes of European under 22 gold medalist Jack Marley, silver medalist Adam Hessian, and bronze medalist Dylan Eagleson. Brandon McCarty, who won a gold medal at the recent Golden Belt Nicolae Linca tournament in Romania, is also selected together with Ricky Nesbitt and Gabriel Dawson, both bronze medalists at the same event. However, the likes of Aidan Walsh is a notable absentee, so it is kind of a new generation coming through here. So how will this issue and the ongoing issues outside of the ring affect those boxers, do you feel, when they're preparing for fairly significant tournaments?
Yeah, well, I suppose that, you know, you made a very good point there in terms of, you know, the casual viewer probably will look at the list and maybe won't know a lot of them. But, you know, Irish boxing, you know, the young Irish boxers, you mentioned a few of them there. And like at the recent European Youth Series, they're record-breaking. Hall of Medals back, 3 goals, included in that. It's probably a team that's in a bit of transition. You know, we've seen in recent years, particularly in the years since the Rio Olympics, a lot of our, you know, stellar names, the Katie Taylors, Michael Conlon's, Paddy Barnes, has all turned professional. We've had a lot of young talent that was emerging have turned over to the professional ranks. But, you know, you look at this role. I mean, this role was first incepted back in 2003. I mean, Gary Keegan was in it for a long time. Billy Walsh obviously sort of double job with his role as head coach. The point I would make about Bernard Dunne's role, or about the role of the IABA High Performance Director, it's not a role that someone has just as a symbolic gesture where they, you know, go and shake hands at major terms. The job, there is actually a job there to direct the high performance unit. And when no one is there, I mean, we're lucky that we have, you know, really good coaches, and Zorante has done remarkable work in the years he's been in Ireland. But that being said, the absence of a person in a position like that, it's a key position, and I would contest perhaps the key position in terms of driving the success of the sport at elite level. It has to have a knock-on effect, because the likes of Zor, as I mentioned, will now likely have sort of more jobs put on their shoulders, and then therefore aren't able to do their own job to the 100%, you know, capability. There is a job there that has been absent now. We've been absent a person in that role since the Tokyo Olympics. And remember, you know, we won an Olympic gold and an Olympic bronze medal in Tokyo. And Irish boxers continuing to achieve. But it perhaps isn't having, you know, boxers maybe themselves don't notice that direct. But it has to have, because it is a role. It's a key role and has been a key role in driving the absolute success of Irish boxing over the last 20 years. And it's just so disappointing now that we're coming off the back of a successful Olympics, almost in spite of the internal wranglings of the IABA, where we come now on the eve of the next major championships, and here we are almost pressing the repeat button again.
Yeah, certainly frustrating. My final question to you, Chris, and I appreciate it's probably a difficult one to answer, but given your expertise on the subject and you're so heavily involved in the boxing world from the journalist's point of view, is there a chance Bernard Dunne could change his mind? I know it's a developing story, but at the moment, what's your gut feeling say?
Only, I was thinking about this a lot in the last couple of hours, because, I mean, it was obviously an inevitable question, and my gut feeling is no, because I think so much has to change within the IABA. So much has to change in terms of probably, for Bernard, the personnel involved. I mean, we mentioned that SWAT paper, and, you know, there was investigations in terms of who was behind that. Bernard himself had named two people who were directors of the IABA. There's a lot of internal problems that go beyond this issue, you know, itself. Like I mentioned, the IABA's own problems. And I think probably in the short term for Bernard to reconsider, too much would have to change. And I mean, we've seen how slow the IABA is to sort of embrace governance change and embrace structural change. I would suggest on the face of it, no. But perhaps, you know, when you see the likes of Kelly Harrington, you know, being so strong, and indeed the IABA statement that has to be said today was quite strong in its favour of Bernard Dunne and in its condemnation of such matters. But on the face of it, Shane, I would have to say no. I think Bernard probably, you know, he would have thought long and hard before issuing his resignation to begin with. So I think short term, it's probably a negative on that.
Okay, obviously a very difficult decision for Bernard, a man that's given so much to Irish boxing over the years. Chris McNulty, thank you very much for the insight on that. The statement that both myself and Chris were referring to, it is a lengthy statement, and you can see that on the IABA website in full. So Sinead, for boxing, we're going to be chatting football next with David Snaid, and Nevo Mahoney from Football Supporters Europe will also be getting us up to date on what the latest is on the Super League and those who oppose the Super League.
RTE 2FM. Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's newest chicken and turkey range is full of B vitamins, which play a vital role in maintaining good health and well-being. Available in store now. RTE 2FM. Game on.
Football.
Now, it is still great to have your company. As always on Game On, I'm Shane Dawson. It's Wednesday the 4th of May and David Snaid is with me now as we turn our attention to Association Football. David, lots to chat about. I suppose there are a lot of interesting news stories across in England that have involvement of a few Irish players and indeed managers. So let us start with Stephen Bradley. Is he on the way to Lincoln City?
It's looking very likely. It's looking as if this could be something that materialises now over the next few days. I know obviously the reports earlier in the week saying that they had kind of targeted him as a number one option to fulfil that, I'll take over the job. That became quickly clear when it was yesterday as well that it was reported that they had, well, Lincoln had approached Shamrock Rovers and wanted to make official that they wanted to speak with Stephen Bradley about that position. Just from speaking to people over the last couple of days, it's definitely a job that he's interested in, that he's considering. I know over the last number of hours today, not much really has happened. I know there's personal stuff going on that he's dealing with and stuff, but at the moment, it's just a case of, I would say, Lincoln and Shamrock Rovers coming to an agreement to get him out of that contract and pay what compensation would be due and what Rovers feel that they would want for him. And I think his contract is up at the end of this season. But it does look likely that, seems to be like one of those jobs that kind of appeals in terms of it's going in at a club that has ambition, has shown in the past that has patience and they can back a manager, but also one that he knows that he can go in at this time as well and be able to mould it to his liking, because it's not as if he's just being flung in to a relegation scrap and has to try and survive, and then it's a case of rebuilding. It'd be a case of going in, getting in the door before pre-season starts and being able to assess matters. So I would say that, barring something dramatic happening over the next few days, I would say he will be heading over there, yeah.
Okay, well, we'll be interesting to see how that one develops. Obviously, Sam Long and Sean Rutten bear on the Lincoln books, but are both on loan at Drogheda. And Anthony Scully currently plays for Lincoln as well. So we'll be interesting if Stephen Bradley goes, how many Irish players follow him and how many players Shamrock Rovers may lose. So Stephen Bradley might be going from Ireland over to England. Wes Houlihan...
is a big happy heading you there, look
you can see where I'm going with this. So Stephen Bradley goes from Ireland to England. Does Wes Houlihan possibly come from England to Ireland?
Is that how it works?
Where Wesley's 2-year stint at Cambridge United has come to an end. His now former manager Mark Bonner hailing the Irish midfielder as the most talented player he's seen play for the club. The 39-year-old enjoyed a delightful Indian summer in Cambridge, helping decide the promotion from League 2 in 2021, earning a place on the league's team of the season. Listen, from a purely impartial journalistic view, he could possibly do a job in the League of Ireland. I'm not going to name any clubs in particular, David. He perhaps has mentioned in the past that he might like to finish his career at Shelburne. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, well, in fairness, if he's been listening to some of the stuff Damien Duff has said about the pitch at Talca Park, he might not want to put his body through it, you know? After the first game of the season, Damien Duff, having spoke to him all week about kind of talking about what it meant about the Save Talca Park campaign, which obviously is a very admirable worthwhile cause, and then within like 20 minutes of the full time whistle going, I was like, never mind the stadium, save the pitch. Listen, it would be amazing. It'd be brilliant to see him back and play.
Be good for the league.
Yeah, we always say, I'll be good for the league. But no, he's one of those players now, even at this stage, that just captures the imagination a little bit. Like, the people would go and see him and be enthralled by what he can do on the pitch. And it's not as if, like, you see him as well, like, the esteem that he's held in at Cambridge in the latter stages, because he's delivering performances. Now, his body was managed, wasn't there? I remember reading articles about him in the sense that he pretty much only play like the Saturday games. He wouldn't maybe do a lot of long trips and travelling away from home, and maybe the schedule might suit him, because I know it's a bit more kind of fleshed out this year in terms of it's not as many games, especially like, well, it was more so before, previously it was like the first half of the season, but it's just whether or not how it'll be managed. Listen, it was a deal that came close to happening before in terms of, like, it's not just out of the blue and all, we're joking about it, but it's not as if we're just like looking at, oh, will he play for Shelburne, he has that affinity, he might go back there. This was a deal that could have happened before and then just didn't materialise, and then obviously, like, this is a point as well with with Wales, even though, like you mentioned there about the Indian summer, it feels as if he's had like a really long Indian summer because he went over late enough in terms of mid-20s. And
very true. Yeah.
Like it's like one of those, you know, like, oh, I discovered him before that band, you know, you don't want to go and see him when they're really hit a big time.
Wales hipsters.
Yeah.
That's a flag. Stickers. I can see that already.
So there's the Save Holger Park campaign stickers. There'll be the Wales hipsters. That should be the name of a good fanzine, actually.
Yeah. You'd have to refer to him as Wesley. I interviewed Pat Fenlon before, and I was mentioned Wes Hill, and his, every time he mentioned, he goes, ah, Wesley, yeah, Wesley.
Do you know what his confirmation name is?
Wesos?
Yeah.
No.
Cantona.
Oh, I did know that. Sorry, I did know that.
William Johnson.
I'm
joking.
You've already dashed my hopes. You can't hang me out to dry with that. You've already dashed my hopes as to the Wes may not be coming back at the start. But
no, like, it depends. Cause there's a family aspect there to it too. Like, he's been based in Norfolk, obviously. Predominantly, Helen would have played for Norwich City, and like, that's probably part of the world. And I know pretty much he is set up and established. Yeah, it just depends on what the stage of his life with his family and all the rest of it, and what he wants to do. Listen, of course, it'd be fantastic to see him back. Really would.
Yeah, I suppose.
The more quality, the better.
I suppose I agree. I don't know. I'm sure Shelburne fans might take him back. Who knows? He'd be 40 in May. He could come back end of the season. Who knew? Do a job. Keep shells up. More good news before we get on to the Champions League. Jason Malumbi has signed a 3-year deal at West Brom following a successful loan spell from Brighton this season. And keeping with the good news for Irish players, Bournemouth were promoted to the Premier League last night. So that's good news for Mark Travers, Gavin Kilkenny and Robbie Brady. So it's nice to have a bit of positivity.
Yeah, although two of those players will probably have to leave the club now, won't they?
So it's sorry nice to bring it back. Positivity, on. David. Come on.
Yeah. Just on Jason Malumbi, I did a piece today for the 42. Just because it's one of those things that could very easily just slip through the radar. Gavin Cooney, one of my colleagues at the 42, did a really interesting interview with Jason Malumbi a couple of years ago, talking about just what his body had been through with, like, 15 months out with different injuries, knee injuries and dislocations and this, like, cartilage problems and stuff, and what he's been through to get himself back and being captain of the Ireland under 21s in and around the first team with Brighton. Before those injuries, he was kind of in the mix to probably, he was in the first team squad, he could have maybe broke in. It's just that little bit of luck sometimes, you know, where you might get an injury the wrong time. And he's proven over the last number of years to have that durability. Like, you watch him playing, he's just all action, he's energy, he's fiery, he's like up and down the pitch. Like, he's just got that engine on him, you know. He's not one of these who's happy to just sit and play 5-yard passes left and right and keep it tidy, which is grand, and that's a place for that. He's just all over the place in the pitch. And he's shown that durability in the Championship over 80 appearances now between Lawns at Millwall, Preston last year, West Brom. Now he has that 3-year contract, a bit of stability there that's making the point. Just set down roots a little bit and just kick on and be able to have that, the confidence of having that permanent gig behind you now and being able to kind of, that's what Steve Bruce was making the point in the quotes he said about him, was just talking like about actually now properly establishing himself. He's only 22 years of age, but he's been around for a little while. Dropped out of the Ireland picture in terms of appearances over the last 6 games, but could be someone who would have played a part in June with the Nations League. And then, yeah, the Bournemouth lads, Mark Travers, you know, poor fellow.
It's like a conversation of Zulu Kelleher. And then I was like, sorry, what about me, lads?
I know. And you look back to that game against Serbia at the start of the qualifiers, under obviously Stephen Kenny, and like Travers at that point was like completely different in terms of confidence and where he was at. And you think now of a similar game, he's not making those couple of mistakes in the match. Remember that chip from Mitrovic where he does them. But it's going to be great for him back in the Premier League. Going to be, you would imagine, their first choice in there. And then Gavin Kilkenny is a kind of an interest. And Robbie Brady, like, kind of in and out, really hasn't really established himself. I think he was just a kind of an experienced head in there, and he's going to have to find a new club. But like, Gavin Kilkenny is the interest one, because at the start of the season he was looking really, really good. Really good. And actually just going through it there, and we were talking about Wes. There was a piece we were talking about, this could be a fellow who has a lot of those similar dynamics to him in terms of his passing. Like you go on, at the start of this season, like, you go on Twitter pages for Bournemouth, and like every bit of their content, hashtag or whatever, would just be like little clips of him passing and the moves he was making and how good he was playing. So he could have had a loan. I think it was the Blackpool that fell through. So now for him, similar to maybe Malumbi now, it's just about kicking on to that next level, hopefully, and getting some regular football at that Championship level high end.
Okay, well, kicking on to another level, the Champions League semi-final. We mentioned earlier we had the Real Madrid team news. If you weren't listening earlier on, where were you? Courtois, Carvajal, Militao, Nacho, Kroos, Benzema, Modric, Casemiro, Valverde, Vinicius Jr. and Ferland Mendy. And we now have the Manchester City team news, and that is Ederson, Kyle Walker returns, Ruben Diaz captains, Laporte, João Cancelo, Rodri, De Bruyne, Bernardo Silva, Riyad Mahrez, Gabriel Jesus and Phil Foden. So, plenty of stars, plenty of goals last time out. Yeah, how do you see this one going?
It'll be a good game.
It will be a good game.
That thing I can say for certain.
Yeah.
I have no idea what score it's going to be.
Is that fence comfortable?
It's very nice, actually. No, we were chatting about it earlier, about what to expect from the game. Like, the first leg was just incredible. Was like that clip. Have you seen that clip when Vinicius does Fernandinho the second one? Because in fairness, you can see why Fernandinho wants to go in and put that pressure on, because he's a couple of moments beforehand, he was positive, did that, got the ball and set up the goal, wasn't it, for Foden at the back post with the header. But then you see that clip and then you see Pep Guardiola, even at the halfway line, just absolutely like collapsing on the ground because he knows what's going to come. That just shows you what the Champions League means to him and to City, because he was brought in to deliver the Champions League. He's secured this legacy in terms of domestically, but what he's done with the League Cups, the FA Cups and the Premier League,
yeah,
to go win it again. But he needs to win the Champions League, I would say, just to put the cherry on the cake a little bit.
Absolutely, the pressure is on. And how good the Champions League is in its current format, David, and that moves our conversation on nicely as we welcome Niamh O'Mahony into the conversation. And it is Niamh O'Mahony from Football Supporters Europe. So Niamh, great to chat. I suppose we're talking about the Champions League and all the money associated with it. So you are part of a fans group, and basically the FSE have released a statement recently enough, which you can find on their Twitter page, and it is basically alluding to the Super League hasn't gone away, and you're part of a group now that is based over in Hamburg as a group, and basically trying to combat the Super League and the incredible money that is ruining our game, perhaps.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks, Shane, and hello to you both. I was listening to the conversation there with interest when it comes to the developments of Irish football. So I work for Football Supporters Europe, FSE. It's a European-wide supporters organisation, and essentially go back about 12 months ago when the Super League with 12 clubs was first mooted. FSE was involved with a lot of its national members in the UK and in Germany and France, just highlighting the impact that, you know, a closed shop league focused on TV money would actually have for the wider game, including Ireland. I think it's really important to stress. And we heard word last week, actually, that three of the remaining clubs are still actually working behind the scenes and very much actively trying to keep the idea alive.
So is it a case of the FSE as a whole, its just primary objective now is to stop the Super League, or is it a bit more wide-ranging in terms of the aims and goals in the short to long term?
Oh yeah, FSE has been around for over a decade at this point, I suppose, and its primary focus, I suppose, is improving supporter experience on match night. So what does that mean in reality? Liverpool fans, for example, had issues when they went to Benfica 2 or 3 weeks ago. Those came into FSE, and then we would talk directly to UEFA and raise ticketing. Speaking of tonight's match, Manchester City fans actually have not got the ticket allocation that they were supposed to get as a minimum requirement. And again, that was something that FSE would have advocated to UEFA about and asked them to look at and change. I suppose what happened with the Super League last 12 months ago, what it showed everybody, including President Seferin, was that supporters really do have a strong role to play here. And it was very much the supporter voice, particularly in the UK amongst the Premier League fans, but elsewhere in Spain and Germany as well, that I suppose brought the FSE and everything that we do and all the work that we do very much to the fore. So the relationship between ourselves and UEFA has moved kind of onto a much stronger platform. They're definitely more open. They're definitely listening this time around. So we have brought all of our concerns that we're seeing in the last week or two back to UEFA as well, and really just trying to advocate the importance of sporting merit, which to us means, you know, when your club does well, you do well. And also taking into account the fact that the solidarity within leagues. So if we bring that to a League of Ireland set up, we'll have talked long and hard in the last couple of years that if one club repeatedly qualifies for Europe and gets into a group stages, the financial clout that they would then have would actually, you know, have a detrimental effect to the League of Ireland. So the idea of these super leagues where they're closed off and they hoover up all of the finance that actually underpins European football is something that everybody should be taking note of. And if I could just plug one thing, if people wouldn't mind logging on to Win It on the Pitch, and again, the link is on our Twitter feed at Fans Europe. We're asking fans across Ireland and across Europe to sign a petition to get the European Union to actually look at this issue and try and protect what we believe is our support, the sporting merit of the European model of sport. What does that mean in English? You qualify for Europe through your domestic competitions. It's fair, it's transparent. There is no coefficients that get you in because you're a legacy club. There's no extension of you know, the games and making more games. And I think to bring it back around to what yourself and David were speaking about, last week's match was brilliant with City and Real, but that happened with the current format. So there's no reason we can't continue to see really good games and a really high tempo in the years to come. But just trying to make it more transparent and fair for clubs across Europe and leagues across Europe, you know, not just the top leagues as we perceive them.
Excellent stuff. Well, Niamh, wish you the very best of luck in all those endeavours. It is a fantastic movement. And as you mentioned there, do log on to the FSC website and you can see details on their social media platforms as well for more information. Unfortunately, time is against us, Niamh, but great chatting. You've done great work with Cork City, the League of Ireland, SD Europe, and now, of course, with FSE. So hopefully that continues long into the future. David Snaith, thank you very much. You're going from chatting football to playing football, so I'll let you get out the gap. That is it from us and Game On. We'll be back tomorrow evening, a packed show tomorrow. Bernard Jackman will be in studio previewing a huge Champions Cup weekend. Do stay tuned because Tara Kumar is up next after the news. But from all of the Game On team, it's bye for now.
RTE 2FM. On 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new added benefits range is enriched with all your B vitamins, which are essential for your health and well-being. Available in store now.